Good, happy Friday, everybody. This is Aaron Norris. A quick update on the Diana Nyad show. Apparently, it's tonight. They didn't really give us a lot of lead time, so I'm going to stay on top of them to see if I can find another date. At the Millionaire Maker, she had made it sound like it was going to be at the Geffen in September, but it was some NoHo Playhouse that happened to be this weekend. So I will keep on top of that. And then everything in the portal should be working. If you're having problems, please shoot me an email and we will troubleshoot. And other than that, I'm going to hand it over to Dad and let's get going.
Okay. Tony Alvarez is on the line. I'm as well. I'm going to go ahead and talk a little bit about the goal stuff. I talked with Mike Cantu this morning and I hadn't talked with him in about 18 days. So I wanted to get an update from him. Smoking is really his toughest category to give up, and that's kind of the idea of the Millionaire Maker, was for each of us to choose that one category that we have a tough time with. This is his. He told me of a story where he had a gallbladder operation, and he was in a hospital bed, and his whole goal was to, I guess, if he could blow hard enough that a ping pong ball passed a certain line on a test thing, he could go up to the roof and smoke a cigarette. And he got that done, and he went up, and he had somebody with him, and he started smoking the cigarette and literally passed out, was headed face first to a face plant on the concrete. When he came to, he actually lit the second cigarette off the end of the other one. So I asked him, well, what's the last time you've – by the way, he did say he hadn't he hadn't smoked in 19 days, which is he's staying true to his promise. So I asked him, "When's the last time you haven't smoked in 19 days?" And he said, "Never." He said, "From the day I started, there's never been 19 days of not smoking ever." Wow. And he said, "When I was 50 years old, that was my goal, that I would quit smoking, and then there was always a reason not to do it. I actually had written the goal twice as big as any other goal in my book, put it in yellow." And it still never happened until I just committed to do it at the Millionaire Maker, and I told him I really appreciated him doing that. He says there's parts of every day that I don't like you, Bruce, and that's understandable because when you get rid of a very tough habit, especially like smoking, you're probably tempted to do it. And one of the things that he said is that he noticed that he had routines that included smoking. So he would get in the car, put in the key, put in the lighter, put a cigarette in his mouth, and now all of a sudden those steps are not in a normal sequence. So he really had just created a bad habit. And now he's undoing that habit. And he's just pretty excited. I asked him how his daughter felt about it, and she's thrilled. One thing that motivated him, and this I can relate to, most of the people that heard what he was going to do came back with discouraging stories about how hard it was going to be. And for whatever reason, that motivated him. And I remember breaking my Achilles tendon, and somebody asked me what I had done because they saw the cast, and I said I broke an Achilles tendon, and they gave me a horror story. And I realized I'm not telling anybody that again. I just told them I broke my foot because I really didn't want to hear it because I had intended to go play racquetball again. So why Mike is quitting smoking this time, it boils down to he made a decision, he promised himself, and he's keeping his promise to himself. And that's really what this journey's about for the 60 days, is to keep the promise that we made to ourselves. My promise is to lose 30 pounds, so this morning I was to weigh 210.5. I got on the scale at 210.3, so I'm right on the money. My goal was to, thank you, yellow marker for that. I'm supposed to exercise twice a day, 2 hours a day. I've been doing that. Actually got on a treadmill. Instead of walking on it, I ran 2.5 miles when I was in Las Vegas. During the week, that's been the first time I've run 2.5 miles in a long time, so that felt really good. I was up at 5 a.m. this morning walking, and It's now become a habit. It's not a big deal. I realized that all this calorie conversion that I know how to do, I can eat really almost anything. I just have to watch the portions very carefully. I also figured out it takes 2,200 steps for me to do a mile on my treadmill if I'm going at a 4.0 pace. And the calories burned in that mile is 125. And I really think about, okay, if I want to eat something with 125 calories, I've got 2,200 steps that I have to do to take that off. And so it really helps me not put things in my mouth that I don't want. I made a promise that I would eat right every meal, and I have kept that. It helps me not to cheat at all. When I'm in one of these mindsets, I can do that. You could surround me with pizza right now. I could care less. I'm committed to doing this. But it really helps me not to cheat. I'm going to take Saturday off and I'm going to eat ice cream and stuff. That doesn't really work for me, because when I'm in this mindset, I want to keep it that way every day. It's just easier for me to do that. Exercising every day, getting up at 5 in the morning, that's no longer just, it's not a willpower decision, it's become a habit. So I'm back into that mode where I just do it, get up and I do it. The goal for me is two main things: to keep the promise to myself that I made and to stay below 190 really for the rest of my adult life. So what I'm doing, I've already discussed it with Sandy, is I'm going to get rid of everything that is too big when I'm 190. So I literally won't have anything to wear when I get there. Benchmarks that motivate me: one belt notch is gone. So that happens at about every 8 to 9 pounds. So this belt only has one more notch, then I'm going to have to find another belt, which is great. The descending scale being encouraging: next week it'll be under 210 pounds, and that'll be the first time in a long time. Struggles in the past: eating out and eating at night. Just went to Vegas for 3 days. We had a suite. We had a refrigerator. We bought everything at Whole Foods, brought it in the hotel, ate there. I've gotten rid of some of the bad habits, certainly not practicing soothing a bad day with food. I exercise or I read the things that we've been asked to read. I'm making exercise a priority. I don't eat numb calories, and I calculate everything that goes in my mouth. So these are the things that I knew I needed to start to do, and the reasons to succeed, I keep on reminding myself every day of the person that I want to be. I want to be this Bruce Norris now between 180 and 190. I want to be able to take karate and help other people get out of it what I got out. I want to be healthy. I like my appearance better. Someone in my world came up during the week and said, "Man, you've lost some weight, haven't you?" And that feels pretty cool when that happens. And the bottom line is, I have promised you guys that I am going to come through with the goal, and I've given myself no choice but to do it, and so it's going to happen. We were asked to read Design Your Destiny by Guy Finley this week. Tony Alvarez had suggested that book. I had never read it before, and so this is my first book I've ever read by Guy Finley. I wasn't sure what I was going to think about it, because it's a little esoteric for me, but I found a lot of value in it. And so, Tony, glad you joined us, and thank you for suggesting the book.
Hi, Bruce. Thank you very much for having me. Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah, we can hear you just fine.
Well, that's the first miracle of the day for me, because I got to do this all by myself, okay? So
uh-oh.
I'm not a computer savvy guy, so this was a miracle all by itself. So
when did you first read this book?
Oh yeah, okay. This book was originally written under a different name, I want you to know. This came into my hands as a result of back in 1990, 92, 93, I think it was. This was actually written under the title of The Key of Kings. And it was part of a course that Ken Roberts, I don't know if you guys remember Ken Roberts, he used to do commodities and stuff like that. And I had met Kenny through some marketing, actually, that he had sent out. And I was looking, you know, I had come out of, that was one of my real estate disaster periods. And I was, you know, trying to get myself back together again and some stuff. And so I was looking at anything to make money. So I ran across this thing on commodities, and it was, I forget the name of the actual course. I think it was the Key of Kings, the how to get wealthy and something. So I sent away for this course, and inside that course about, you know, how to make money and all this stuff was the Key of Kings book, which was actually This Design Your Destiny, and another book by Vernon Howard called Psychopictography. So you have to understand that up until that time, Tony had only identified what I was chasing. In other words, I was chasing after money all the time, and never really thought in terms of getting wealthy. If you know, if anything, it would be to get rich. That was the word. That was the trigger word for me. But it was about, you know, I got to make a lot of money. Become a millionaire was one of the terms. I remember that and stuff like that. But I was chasing money. And so when I picked up, this book and I started reading it, it had some practical information. I identified, you know, and I started reading through it, and it was pretty much the same chapters. Actually, I think what they changed in the book was the part three part of it, the later part. But, you know, all the steps, chapter five, starting with chapter five, get one thing done, take the conscious risk, all of that stuff. I was reading it and I was thinking, okay, you know, I had never gotten into anything esoteric or anything, you know. I mean, even back then, Tony was not the type of person who you want to have a conversation about religion or, you know, your spiritual beliefs or any of that. I had no time for any of that nonsense as far as I was concerned. I was just after the money. And when I read this book, I started to read it. It got my attention because what I basically was getting out of this was the message was all of the headaches and the problems that you've experienced financially, you created them yourself. There's no one else to blame.
Hmm.
Now that was kind of a slap across the face, which I remember when I came to that conclusion, pretty much, you know, I don't think I threw the book across the room, but I let it go like it was kind of on fire. Like that was something I didn't want to, you know, what are you talking about? I had just come out of bankruptcy blaming everyone else, basically.
Right.
So that was the beginning of my love affair, so to speak, with my own mind and trying to really get a better view of how is Tony's perception and way of seeing things and his beliefs and his conditioning, how does that come down, how does that equate to my practical decisions in my everyday business life? Because to think that those are not connected is foolish. But I had never questioned that. You know, I had always, it was always about the doing part of it. Just got to get out there and do more stuff, you know.
Yeah, there's a quote in the book, and that's one thing I like about this book. It seems like it's pretty rich in the quotes that you could take away. It says it's the forces at work in this inner world that actually determines the way in which our outer one turns.
Yes, and you know, Bruce, the thing is that, and here's the problem sometimes for us, just like it was for me when I first read the book. Because, and I tried to explain this when I was at the Millionaire Maker, and it's difficult. It's very difficult to explain sometimes because it's quite frankly, it's much easier to experience, to put it that way. But when someone is in the mindset of wanting to become wealthy, you know, they want to become a millionaire, they want to become wealthy, and they think in terms all the times of what do I got to do? What's the practical steps, you know? I got to buy so many houses, I got to do so many things, okay. So, but here's the question that kind of I had to deal with. I couldn't hide from it, and I was probably the poster child for this situation because I had been through bankruptcy twice, but yet I had also made a lot of money. So I had to, you know, I had to confront the fact that when I was in the money and I was, you know, experiencing success and I was doing deals and all this stuff, I was a genius. Tony, you know, my opinion of myself was really great. And then as things, you know, unwound and changed and I was going through the changes actually in the marketplace and all that kind of stuff, I would have to say that Tony in that point was pretty much asleep because he kept doing more of what wasn't no longer working. And he wasn't questioning anything. He wasn't sitting down. As a matter of fact, the mindset that I was in at that point was, I know everything. Look, I made this money. I already know what to do. I just, you know, it's this that isn't working. It's the market. It's this other thing. It's some other person, you know. Oh, I'm missing, you know, it's this guy's fault, the agent who brought me the deal. But after experiencing some financial success and then crashing and burning, the only thing that I could not lie to myself about is that I had been the one making all of those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
There was a point in time, and I remember walking home from the courthouse without a car and having a lot of time to think and realizing this is the second time now that I went through bankruptcy. There was no one left to blame.
Mm.
And quite frankly, because I was alone. You know, when you go through, when you're walking home, there's nobody with you, and you're looking around. It's kind of a weird experience. It's almost kind of like an out-of-body experience, so to speak. You're walking around. You know there's cars around you, but you don't hear anything. You know, you feel pretty isolated. But the one thing I could no longer do was blame anyone else. So I became very humble, and I went through a kind of a cathartic process. And you know, you know how they say that, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear, right?
Right.
Well, you know, I've identified throughout my life that teachers are not always individuals. You know, they're not always people. Teachers are lessons. And the two teachers that I've identified throughout life and that were confirmed for me through this book and other books by Guy, teachers are either education, formal education, some kind of education, you know, book education, reading, whatever, or experience. And quite frankly, the experience part, we always think it has to be our own, but not necessarily. We can borrow both of those from other people that have come before us. So for those people that read this book that don't really know who Guy Finley is, Guy Finley, his father, by the way, was a showbiz guy. He was the guy who brought kind of got the show together, the Johnny Carson show, the Tonight Show.
Okay.
Before Johnny Carson was even on it, it was, I think, Jack Parr.
Yes, that's right.
So his dad actually, and his dad was the first person to ever come up with recording shows as opposed to just being live. He started to record shows, so he was very wealthy. And Guy grew up, his best friend is Desi Arnaz Jr. He grew up right next door to Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz and those folks. And he actually was, he became a music composer and worked for, he was the first individual to work for Motown Records. And he wrote quite a few scores and stuff like that. And he actually wrote The Streets of San Francisco. I don't know if you guys remember that show.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote the music for that show and stuff. So he experienced a lot of stuff, a lot of business success, came from a very wealthy background and stuff like that. But he kind of went through some changes himself and kind of walked away from all of that, realizing and I've heard him speak about it briefly. He doesn't like to talk about himself or his own past a lot, but where he basically he was surrounded by people that were very wealthy, but also very afraid.
Hmm.
They were always constantly afraid of losing what they had accumulated. And I know what that is. You know, I've experienced that. You know, I've experienced having a bunch of stuff and then being riddled with the fear of not being able to control it into the future.
one of the quotes that I marked to read, it says, for each time you have the awareness not to choose from that bank of old patterns produced by your limited thought nature, new and higher alternatives appear before your inner eyes. So on your way home that day, I guess you had to make a conscious choice that you were going to stop making those same choices.
Well, yeah, and like I said, you know, a lot of this sometimes it's easier, quite frankly, even though it's hard to go through it, but it's much easier to experience it and become aware of the reality of what you've caused yourself to go through. That's the only way I can put it. Than it is to explain it to someone else. Someone else sees you and goes, "Hey, what are you doing? You know, what are you doing?" Or they look at this book and they say, you know, they start reading some of it and they go, "Well, geez, yeah, it's kind of." And let me just say one thing. What's really happening, and this is what I've identified, what's really happening when you read something that doesn't necessarily, there's something inside of you that feels a little uncomfortable. You're basically going into a part of your mind, a part of your experience bank, so to speak, where you've never been before. And quite frankly, if you haven't succeeded the way you want to, maybe that's a place for you to check out, because all knowledge and all anything worthwhile, anything I've ever learned that's been worthwhile, was usually in an area where I had never gone before. And in some cases where I thought it's not worth going there. You know, something in me had already judged that, even though I wasn't knowledgeable about the area, I hadn't experienced it myself, somewhere in my mind something had an opinion of it already.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a portion of time in our lives where we kind of conduct ourselves like that, and quite frankly, a good portion of our lives is not our entire life. My dad, for example, is a person just like that. My dad always had a negative response to anything that was presented as new. And quite frankly, all that was happening is that something inside of him didn't want him to go out of his comfort zone.
Exactly.
Anything that would, you know, that made him fearful, he immediately believed as not, you know, that's not in my best interest.
Hmm. You know,
so,
one of the things that whenever I read a book, this book struck me as, okay, I did not understand what I just read. So I had to reread a lot of things that were not easy to understand.
Okay.
And that was fine, because in other words, it's one of those books. It reminds me a little bit of a slapstick, but there's a movie called The Nerds. I don't know if you've ever seen that. There's a guy that's really one of the guys on the other side named Ogre, who they kind of win over at the end of the movie, and they were laying on the ground, they were smoking a joint, so they're all getting philosophical. And it's going around, coming to Ogre, and he doesn't know what to say because he's not very deep. And
right.
He says, after thinking about it, he says, "What if C-A-T spelled dog?" And all the other guys that were geniuses went, "Oh." And that's what this book sometimes felt like, until I read it and go, you know what, that's actually pretty profound, because we do seem like we repeat things over and over again, and we don't get to the source of why we allow that to occur. We blame. So we point out there, and as soon as we point out there, we miss the growth potential.
Yeah, and this is I'm gonna try to explain very briefly exactly what I tried to convey in the presentation at the Millionaire Maker. Okay. Here's where Tony has landed after 32 years of ups and downs, and you know, and trying to become wealthy, or trying to make money, or trying to whatever, you know, trying to become financially independent or financially free, so I didn't have to worry about, you know, where my next, you know, financial headache was going to come from. If whatever it came from, I would be prepared. You know, I'd have enough money to take care of it, or someone in my family. You know, that's always been a concern, and probably because of how I got started, you know, coming here and not having, you know, everything like everyone else, and you know, growing up in some form of poverty, so to speak. But I've landed in this place. There are rules set in place which are evidenced through all of nature that are, and the conversation is not about who set them, because I don't ever want to get into that conversation, because everybody starts thinking it's about religion and they have their own beliefs and all that nonsense, and I don't want to get into that. As far as I'm concerned, that's really just a waste of time. But what I am curious about is the facts. What are the facts? Just, you know, I don't have to worry about my heart beating. I don't have to be concerned about oxygen getting into my, I don't have to think, okay, inhale now, Tony. I gotta inhale, I gotta exhale. There are certain things that happen because they're set by what I refer to as natural laws. Well, I decided to take that thinking, once I identified those things, and said, is it possible that success also is ruled by specific natural laws that are set in place? I mean, a tree does certain things and it grows. You take away certain things from it and it dies. So could it be that success also has underlying its foundation is built so that we can learn certain things, certain steps that we need to take, and other things that we need to stop doing that will deliver us more easily to this place that represents financial freedom to us. Now, keeping in mind, there's other things that I kind of came to the conclusion about, like money. You know, we look at money and we think it's something special, when quite frankly, it's just a method of exchange that used to be maybe water or food, or, you know, people used to exchange moccasins for, you know, a couple of arrows, you know, and now we have paper that does the same thing. So but the theory of how to acquire it's still the same. It's no different. Okay. So if we can get things down to those basic levels and really identify it at that level, and then bring it to present day, and say, okay, I don't have these things, and then and here's the things that I would like to get. Then there's a set of rules in place. For example, here's one rule that I believe in, and it's confirmed for me through these writings. Need should always be placed ahead of wants. In other words, we have specific needs that we need to take care of, because, you know, nature does that as well. You notice that, you know, if we stop breathing, the brain lights go out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an involuntary muscle. You see how that works? In other words, whatever created us had enough common sense to realize, okay, these guys may get a little stupid on me and they may forget to inhale. So let's make that something that happens so where they don't have to think about it, frees up our mind to worry about other things that are more, let's say, less important. Okay?
Okay.
So at a very basic level, if what we want is wealth, all we have to figure out is If there's a set of laws that govern everything that's physical around us in nature, those laws must also apply to things like becoming wealthy, because like you're doing with your health, and I'm doing with my weight and stuff, it's if you take certain actions, your body responds.
Mm-hmm.
It can't help but respond, because it's respecting the order of certain laws that have been put in place. Becoming wealthy is no different. I mean, the reason that the Norris Group is what it is today is because of the things that you've done and improved on over time. I mean, consciously, carefully, and proactively making specific decisions. And so there you go. This thing flowers. Now, as the market changes, and it's incumbent upon the Norris Group to also look out there and go, okay, how can we adjust to better serve this market, because it's dictating that. Well, becoming wealthy, as far as I'm concerned, is exactly the same thing. In this book, besides many, but to be honest with you, this is my favorite, because it was the first wake-up call for me, and also it has the steps that it has, the first 12 steps. And actually, I strongly suggest that people stay away from part 3 and just focus their attention at the beginning on the first 11 steps. Don't even go to the 12th step. because that's really the bulk of any business person that has, or any person who's has a desire to get wealthy but has experienced a problem. Like, okay, we can't get away from this. I started basically speaking to audiences when you asked me in 2005 at the first Millionaire Maker. And I have spoken probably to, I don't know, without counting, I'd say at least 1,000 people. I know it's more than that, but I'm going to say about 1,000 people. I would say probably a good 80% of those people I have seen repeatedly over the years at classes and courses and seminars and club meetings that haven't done anything.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they have a tremendous desire within them to do something. And they feel, I can see it in their eyes and in their faces and then hear it in their voices when they stay there and wait to speak to me. They're ruled by their frustration of not understanding why they can't overcome the fear of taking that action. And the only action that they allow themselves to take is another class, another course, or another club meeting because they've become conditioned that that's no longer scary. Because I can tell you that those people, before they went to their very first club meeting, probably obsessed about that. Should I go there? What are people going to think about me? Maybe I don't have – what if somebody asks me a question and I have to reveal that I don't know anything and it's my first club meeting? You know, all those internal conversations, all of that stuff is addressed right in this book, and that's why I love it the way I do, because it helps me to confront the internal fears and the internal nonsense that keeps us, by the way, from living our lives frustrated and not doing the things that we really, our heart desires to do.
What's interesting about the Millionaire Maker concept is that, you know, thus far, you know, you've mentioned this book as a vehicle for wealth, but the tools are exactly the same for what you were talking about, my health goal, your weight goal, and it's, have you put your finger on why, when you can have the rules down so well for one category, it's hard for you to transfer that same process on the category that's difficult for you?
Well, that goes to the heart of what Guy tries to teach throughout all of his materials, because that's an excellent point. That's an excellent question, and really a great point, because here's the thing. It comes down to really, you can identify it if you're looking at practical steps. You can say, well, I'm just not taking the actions that I know I need to take, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because if you took the element of decision out of Tony, if you, like, for example, I went away 20 days to a place up in Weimar called, it's run by Seventh-day Adventists, right? It's all about getting healthy and losing weight and everything. But it's really about getting healthy, not so much losing weight, because there's a lot of people that have their diabetics and stuff and go there. And those guys actually, they get a bus full of people that are diabetics, and when the bus leaves in 20 days, they're completely off their medication. Now, what is it that happens? You enter that place, and certain decisions are taken completely away from you. For example, there's no televisions in any of the rooms. There's nothing that goes on there. Meals are served. The last meal of the day is served around 5 o'clock. And they adhere to that process of eat like a king in the morning, eat like a prince for lunch, and eat like a pauper for, you know, so you get a little bit of soup and something. And not that I ever went hungry, I want you to know, because I would have probably gotten in my car and left. But, you know, but they also encourage you to walk, nothing else. They have a gym there, you know, but, you know, they don't tell you to go lift weights or anything. They just say go for walks, and they have 600 acres or something of beautiful streams and woods and stuff. And then in the morning, what do? They have a chapel, and you can go in there, and, you know, and they have like a morning talk that's given. Not a religious thing, but just a morning talk that's given there to kind of set your mind straight, your mindset for the day. And then later in the day, they have the doctor comes in, the Dr. Ng or one of the doctors, and does a presentation on the benefits of, you know, not dealing with animal products, not eating animal products or this or that or refined foods and that. So now you're getting bombarded, so to speak, basically through entertainment, and you're being encouraged to do things. But they're also taking away certain things, so that they're kind of putting you into a certain area to where your decisions are almost a little bit controlled, you know. So you actually become someone else. That's really what happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, I dropped 20 pounds in 20 days, but I was extremely healthy. All animal products were completely out of my diet. It's a vegan diet, which I didn't even like that word. I didn't even realize that. I didn't read the manual. Had I read it and saw that word, I probably would have never gone. So what is it? Why was Tony able to do that there and then come home? I stayed vegan for 2 years, and then I started adding salmon to my meals.
But, how convenient from where you live.
Yeah, I told Dr. Ring, I said, listen, I love you people, but I'm not giving up salmon, okay? I can't do it, all right? It's just sacrilegious living where I live. But the point is that there's something in us internally. There's something in us that has identified. It's identified and it's become attached to certain decisions that we see as being who we are. So part of that for Tony is freedom, okay? You can follow this for 1 second because it's not going to be that long. You know, I have never been someone who takes orders from anybody very well, especially when it constitutes a change in habits that are going to rub against something in me that's already conditioned. It's already conditioned to do this. You know, like for example, I love sourdough bread. And what do I love it with? With butter all over it and maybe a hunk of cheese next to it. You know? So none of those things, by the way, do well in my body. I have a real problem with anything that has wheat. I all of that stuff. But there's a part in Tony that smiles the minute that he can smell bread baking or that he gets it in his mouth. I mean, he just lights up like you would not believe. It feels warm and loving. Now, pretty tough to give up warm and loving. You know? Yeah, you know, you got to rip. It's almost like ripping a part of you off, you know, of your own body. It's almost like you're cutting it out, you know. So, and the reason for this is, would it surprise you to know that when I was a young kid, my mom, because we were poor, you know, we didn't have a lot of stuff, but one of the things that she did for us to show us affection was food, and also she would bring us home a honey-dipped donut, which in California are called glazed donuts. And, you know, I loved that, and I loved my mom for doing that. I mean, I used to take that donut, stick it in my mouth, and the first thing I would think of, oh, my God, this is like heaven.
Mm-hmm.
So as I would walk to school later, when I went to grammar school, you know, in years, would it surprise you to hear that Tony would stop? Before I got to school, I'd stop at the corner bakery and get myself a donut. And I would save my little monies, you know. I didn't have a lot of money. I would save my little money to go in there and pay. Well, I think it was a nickel or something at the time and get my honey-dipped donut, put my little white bag, and go off to school. So some of these things are ingrained in us, you know. And that question, you asked me that question before, and I thought, wow, you know, it is amazing that I've been overweight for most of my life, and I've gone up and down on the scale like you would not believe. But when I locked and loaded and going after money, I mean, there was nothing was going to stop me from getting it. Nothing was going to stop me from becoming wealthy. It's just there was no power on earth that I would succumb to. And I think it's finding a way to remind ourselves and honestly believe deeply that if we don't make these other changes with the same type of dedication, that we're not living our best life.
Exactly.
We're just not doing the best we can.
There's another great quote that speaks to what you just talked about. It's on page 62. Those negative states that try to stop you from taking the next step of any chosen journey are just psychological special effects. These obstacles of psychic flash and smoke are generated by the mind to keep you from disturbing its established levels of comfort. I really like that.
Well, it goes to show you how I got hooked on this work, but I want you to know something, and it's important that I address this. There have been, even after I started studying this work, Bruce, and I mean, I tell you what, I saw this as my salvation, because I saw it as it helped me to understand. It helped me to put a mirror, to look in the mirror and look back into myself and realize, oh, my God, you know, all of these idiotic things that I've ever, all these stupid decisions I've made and stuff like that, they've all been self-created. Every problem I've ever experienced has been self-created. So, but would you believe, even with the love of this work that I have, there have been times where I put these books down and I didn't want to look at them. I didn't want to open them. I didn't want to have the conversation. They do talks at the foundation up here on a weekly basis, several times a week. I did not participate. I was living a mile away from the foundation. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't go. And then, of course, you know, I would all of a sudden reach a point where I could let that go, whatever energy that was taking me over, so to speak. And it's the same thing. It's the same kind of thing that comes in to tell me, you know, and it convinces me. Sometimes we're stronger, like you said. You know, you were able to go to Vegas, and your commitment to yourself is stronger than any other conversation your mind is trying to give you. And you even have it's almost like you have a closed door policy. You know, not open for that conversation this week. You know.
Well, you were correct in putting a time frame attached to it, because obviously a year ago, I can't tell you how many diets I've started, and by noon I'm eating something in my pantry looking for something else to eat 4 hours after I started a diet. So the commitment wasn't there. So that's part of the trick, is you kind of got to figure out, okay, what gets me to over the hump to where I'm going to make a promise to myself and keep it. You know, that's the hard
and that's,
thing.
You know what? And that's true, but I want to tell you something. And, you know, as I go through this book and I remember, you know, how I read this book and how confusing it was for me at times. I mean, the honesty of the statements that he writes. You know, this is not the kind of book that you can do really well with a highlighter. Not for me, because I end up highlighting, you know, three quarters of the book, and then but one of the things that I recognize as having to be a must do, and this is the toughest part, because I really like myself. But here's a must-do. We have to walk away from certain parts of ourselves, because, and there's something I put into the Millionaire Maker, and I know it's difficult to grasp, but I said in order for us to, you know, we have to be willing to step aside or step down in order for someone else to step up. What most people didn't probably realize during that Millionaire Maker is that I wasn't speaking about other people. Most of the presentation that I did was about us internally.
Right.
So, you know, I, for example, at my business, at my office, in order for Sabrina to step into my shoes, which I've trained her for years to do, and she's basically pulled the trigger on every purchase I've made since 2008. And when I told her this year, I said, you know, pretty soon Tony's going to not be here, and you have to, you know, step it up a little bit. And she got weirded. She got a little weird on me. And I said, what's bothering you? She goes, well, I'm going to have to do everything. Now I have to get out there and buy stuff. And I sat her down and I said, Sabrina, I just want, and I went through on the computer one purchase at a time. I said, who actually made the purchase on this? I did. And who purchased this? I did. And who purchased? I said, as a matter of fact, can you find me one house that Tony pulled the trigger on since 2008? Well, you helped me a little bit with this one. I said, there was one.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, but now something inside of you is telling you that because Tony's not going to be a block away from here, that all of a sudden you're not capable of doing this. So if we look at that internally, in order for us to step into who we already are capable of being, we have to let go of something else that doesn't serve us anymore, which is what Guy tries to convey to this book, which sometimes our mind doesn't want to grasp it because it's difficult to accept that you're going to have to give something up. And nobody wants to feel the pain of loss, because mm-hmm. even if it doesn't serve us, Bruce, you know, even if Tony, the fat kid that he's been all his life, you know, there's something in me that recognizes that doesn't serve me. I'm 59. I'm going to be 60 next year. I do not want to arrive at 60 years old worrying about climbing up a flight of stairs. So what do I have to give up? I have to give up the kid who loves smelling the bread or the feeling of that comfort, that love food, in order for something higher. And even if in the moment right now, I don't know what that feels like to be that Tony that isn't 350 pounds, that's 190 or 185 or whatever it is that he's going to be able to be, you know, we have to take the step to go in the direction of that thing that something in us desires to do. In this case, we're talking about becoming wealthy, you know. What says that each of us doesn't have the right and the ability to be wealthy monetarily? If there's, the world runs practically on its own, we're the ones who screw it up. I mean, I've never seen a fight or a war between a group of trees in some pasture or something.
Another quote that's directly what you have just been talking about says, facing your fearful feelings brings them to an end, because if you proceed while being afraid, you'll see all that has been scaring you is you.
You know, and one point that I'd like to make, because as you quote these things out of this book, I want you to know the quotes that you pull out. I mean, there are things that I have highlighted throughout this book. It's just amazing what I've done to this book. And I have the original Key of Kings also still. There's one thing that we have to differentiate. Like, for example, when you talk about fears like that, what we're really discussing are psychological fears, you know, which, and there's a difference between, and we have to make this distinction in order for people to grasp this accurately. There's a difference between a psychological fear, which is something that's conjured up by your mind when you want to take some action or something like, and the easiest way to explain it is when you say, oh, I want to, you want to meet somebody new, or you want to ask someone out for a date or something, and then your mind starts telling you all the reasons why they're going to reject you and stuff like that. Or more closely related to real estate, I would always have somebody waiting for me, always. It's never, even at the Millionaire Maker, there was someone waiting at the end to convey to me the fact that they don't think they can go out and speak to a real estate agent or to a seller or something like that, and they can't do what I do. That's the way their mind tells them. It's telling them some story that I have some secret weapon, right, that's going to get doors open for me that they don't have. Where physical fears, you know, let's say you decide to, you know, you're going to cross, like over here close to my house, there's the 101, right, but it's actually a two-lane road. But still, people, you know, trucks come barreling down. To them, it's a freeway. When you go to Crow, I mean, there's been people literally killed here, several, by the way, that attempt to cross that, and they don't realize how fast those vehicles are coming, because it doesn't seem that they're that close. And pretty soon, they're right on top of you, you know. And so that's a physical fear. If your mind, you're going to cross that 101 near my house if you ever come to visit, and your mind says, be careful, you know, pay attention. Mm-hmm. That's not a time for you to walk through your fears necessarily, you know. So it's the psychological fears that we're talking about. We're talking about things where, you know, it's the only challenge that you're perceiving, the only danger, I should say, that your mind is perceiving is imagined.
Yeah, you know? One of the quotes that I liked, and I thought it really was, it's a little bit applicable to what you just said about somebody saying, I couldn't do what you did. There's a quote that says, do what's in your power, refuse to deal with what is not.
Beautiful. I cannot tell you how many times I've heard that from Guy Finley's lips. And that's really, if you can remember just that, out of that whole book, and apply it to your life, you're going to change everything about your life. How do you like them apples? Just that one quote, just that one thing you just said, Bruce. And I tell you, that's the truth.
And it's under that title about get one thing done, and then it talks about, okay, do the one thing that's in your power and then do the next one,
right?
So all of a sudden it becomes sequential and you end up with a power you didn't know you had. That's
well, yes, because with every step that you take, in the direction of your fears, quote unquote, with every step, and then you accomplish that thing. Not only your fears, but only your unwanted moments. You know, honestly, more practical. Like he talks about that at that first step. You know, you have a bunch of stuff to do. Tony lives with a perpetual, you know, basket full of paperwork that I got to get through that I never get through. I do a few, and then I hate the thought. I don't even want to talk about it. Like, I don't want to talk about bookkeeping. Dana, you know, chases me around wanting to bring me up to speed on the P&L, the balance sheet, and the cash flow statement, which are three things that I get on a weekly basis, and then the bills that have to be paid for the week. I don't ever want to have that conversation. I'm like, geez, you know, I'll call you back, you know. So, but in actuality, the moment I get through it, when I sit with her and I say, okay, what is it? Okay, I emailed it to you, and we go boom, 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 boom. Maybe 10, 15. There's not that many things. It's done, and I feel like a new person. Well, every situation is like that. Everything, like you want to become wealthy, and you're thinking, I'm going to do it in real estate, and you haven't done it before, and you start thinking, well, geez, I've heard you got to have contacts, you got to find deals, and where am I going to get the deals? Now I need cash, where am I going to get that? And then I got to talk to workers. I don't know any construction people. Well, when you look at the whole thing, it's all of those things, one thing that you have to get done at one time, it's overwhelming. No wonder people don't take the first step. They're overwhelmed with the whole thing. Well, just do one.
Under that step one, and we're not going to cover very many of the steps, but it says talking about what you've just gone through, the inner voice of imminent doom.
And there's one thing. I have to, you know, I really hope to goodness that the people that read this, that took the time and read this book, and I strongly urge you to stay within the first, it'll be a natural occurrence to go any further than that, but within the first 11 steps, and because those can be applied to everything that we're doing in business, absolutely everything. To go further than that, and then you go into, you know, that's if your heart has a desire for something deeper in this work. But if you just stick with those 11, I mean, there isn't anything at all in this book from cover to cover that wouldn't help you accomplish your goals. The only thing is, and this is a warning, it will change your life forever. Forever. It is impossible to adhere to the laws that Guy reminds us of are in place in our lives and think that you can stay the same person. It isn't going to happen. Because I'll tell you right now, if that was the case, this book came into my life at a point in time when I was getting started again, and I was dealing with all of, not only my fears, but confirmation that I was a moron, that I had made money twice. I made millions twice, and I had lost it all. Now I'm going to do it again. I'm getting up. I'm trying to get up my gumption to do it again. And this book comes in and says, excuse me, you better pay attention to your own mind, because you ain't getting any younger. And if you really want to do this, you can accomplish it, but you have a responsibility to pay attention to all of the voices you've been listening to all this time that have led you exactly to this last disaster. If you're unwilling to do that, you're doomed yourself to repeat it. And so I took it seriously. And where did I end up? I ended up knowing that I needed to get help from people that I respected. Quite frankly, you. How did I meet you, Bruce Norris? Did I not chase you down? You know, this book taught me Tony doesn't know everything. And quite frankly, half of what Tony thinks he knows is him listening to voices that are telling him to do stupid things that are not in his best interest. So I learned a different way of thinking. I learned to question my own thoughts, to not accept everything my mind told me as the absolute truth. I learned to understand that I had to look, in my practical life, I had to look for guidance. Just like Guy Finley became a mentor to me about things internally, Bruce Norris became a mentor in things that I did initially, having to do with business and specifically when to do what in the marketplace. But I'll tell you what, over time you also became a mentor about how to conduct myself in my own personal affairs, because you were a perfect example of what I also wanted in my life. So,
wow. Well, I appreciate that very much.
I have a few questions if you got some a few minutes.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. The first one, what was the original book from Brennan Howard? I think you might have mentioned it.
It's called Psychopictography.
Oh.
Psychopictography. But I want you to know you can go online and punch in Vernon Howard, and they have videos of him speaking. And just like you can, you know, you can Google anything on Guy or Vernon Howard. Vernon Howard passed away, actually, back in 1992. And then that's when Guy, who had been a student of Vernon Howard for 30 years, went out and started doing his own thing.
Okay. Another question from Ted. What does Tony and Bruce recommend when you don't know what you are really ultimately passionate about and are trying to focus on too many ways to make money because of this, the fear of choosing wrong and wasting time?
Do you want to take that first, Bruce?
Aaron, one more time. Say the question again, please. This is the beginning of it.
Oh, shoot. Of course, I erased it. It was basically the fear of wasting time. You're not sure what you're ultimately passionate about, so you don't know where to go or where to start.
I got to tell you, I'd rather get passionate about a reason than a process. Honestly, you know, that for me was more important. The what to do sort of emerged because I was passionate about, after getting fired 5 times in a row, I know I didn't want people to control my life monetarily. And when I had a chance to go to work for that buying company in Orange County, there was a whole long list of stuff that I couldn't do, but I concentrated on the only thing that I could do. I could pick up the phone and talk to somebody that owned something, but I was motivated because of what I wanted to do for my family. And I didn't care what barrier I had to cross or where it took me. So I guess that's maybe my answer, is that I would concentrate on getting a deep driving desire. And maybe the process will change, or the, you know, what you do will change as you go on your journey. But I want it to be driven by something that was very important to me. How do you feel about that, Tony?
You know, yeah, and I couldn't agree more with you. And I'm not saying that, you know, just because I'm, you know, patting Bruce on the back. But, you know, I think any of us that have actually accomplished anything worthwhile in our lives know that the why behind whatever we're doing is the steam that feeds that engine. So, you know, when I tried to zero, after you said to me, Tony, you know, speak at the Millionaire Maker and tell us what you did and that kind of thing, I had to go back, and I'd never analyzed my own behavior, really. I went back and I started checking that out and saying, okay, so how did I become rich? I know I was doing stupid things, and I had to stop doing stupid things, but the first thing I landed on as a 3-step process was, the first step was decide what you want to do and why. And I always said the why is the most important part, and that's really an internal conversation that you have to have with yourself. And then second was choose a target market if you're in real estate and learn it well. And then the third one was load your GPS, which was goal, plan, and systems. And the goal is where you want to go. Your plan is how you're going to get there, and your systems were the daily action steps that I identified as being crucial, just like when we're losing weight or whatever. It's in the daily decisions that we make that ultimately get the goal to happen. So, but deciding what you want to do and why, that has nothing to do with the actual business or the part of real estate that you want to get into, or it's an internal conversation about, what is it that I want to accomplish? If it's in the financial world, you know, what's my bottom line? You know, like, for example, for me, I only need $10,000 a month and I can live on half of that. So, you know, can I do that as an agent? Yeah. Can I do it as an appraiser? I did it for years. Can I, you know, so what's the difference? I wanted to get to own assets so that the assets delivered the money to me, and I just had to kind of watch over them a little bit. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. I would say kick to the curb the question, although that's an important question, though. You know, at some point you have to decide what's working in the marketplace, you know, but your reasons behind it are absolutely what's important.
Okay, that's actually all I've got for today. As we wrap up, next week is the Millionaire Real Estate Investor. Mike Cantu picked this book, and I guess we're about to be done. Any final closing questions, thoughts, guys?
Bruce, I guess the only thing I would say is, if you're going to spend time setting goals and making a plan for changing your life financially for the better, spend some of your time, dedicate some of your time to understanding how your mind works and the validity of the thoughts that you have randomly. Question your mind, in other words, question the conclusions that you come to, the excuses you give yourselves, you know. Study your mind, because in the end result, and I repeat this as often as I can, our actions will determine how much money we make, but our mind, our level of understanding, will ultimately decide how much we get to keep. And that, I am telling you, from the hardest, deepest level of experience in my own personal life.